I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This man, as you call him, is not a human being at all, but is in fact a black lectroid named John Parker from the very same Planet 10, and his spaceship is at this moment anchored above Yoyodyne.
Launch Thermopod.
This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FilmSack. Back or two, it doesn't matter. Minding the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, I'm Scott Johnson. It's FilmSack 481. Welcome to the show. I'm joined today by Brian. He found floating naked men in that mountain portal Dunaway.
And then I hit him with my car. Oh, hi. This week I sold my first screenplay to Troma Films. Yep, I'm rich. Well, I have pizza money.
Now, congratulations.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Now, according to the Troma Film Script naming app, that was recently banned by the U.S. government, they're going to title the film The Many Exploits of Cowboy Chop Suey Through the Multiverse. There and back again 9 times. Bravo, Trauma App. Bravo. Anywho, here's the pitch I gave them. Cowboy Chop Suey, born to a Chinese-American mother in a bowl of pinto beans, thus began life as she's destined to suffer it. Going in no direction at all, a mediocre neurosurgeon with this lawsuit waiting to happen, was tossed to the curb after less than stellar performance at her job. You've seen this before, right? On the streets, she loitered around Chinatown, learning useful skills such as finding food by digging through garbage behind various eateries, where she discovered a discarded notebook filled with multiverse theories, which she shows to a gathering group of curious raccoons, those disease-ridden back-alley mammals, the Chinatown trash pandas. Mm-hmm. And now, with her stolen rickshaw covered in bottle rockets lifted from a fireworks stand and ready for an escape to another reality, Cowboy Chop Suey faces the greatest improbability of her downward spiraling life. While, below the streets, in the sewer, a group of clowns mounted on discarded pet alligators peers from the storm drains, keeping a gleeful eye on Team Suey's every move. There, I made your movie worse. You're welcome.
Well, that was really flowerily written. Like, I don't know, that was intense. It's not the...
Right.
You know, if you wait long enough after, I mean, it might even be time now, you could actually release that and people wouldn't make any sort of connection to an existing movie.
Probably not, because it really, the seed of that was the fact that I never noticed in the introduction before that Buckaroo Banzai was born to, a Japanese a mother and basically is a cowboy name and a Japanese word put together to make this multicultural character. And I thought, what an odd idea. How do we bring that to Troma? And that's exactly what I did.
Yeah. More like trauma. All right. Well done.
Trauma. T-R-O-M-A.
Yeah.
But trauma and trauma.
Yeah.
You are traumatized.
There you go. The trauma center. Wow. Moving on. Also with us today, Randy, his band always brought handguns with them on tour, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian.
Hi.
And I mean, especially you, Brian Dunaway. Now that you've sold your first film,
thank you.
I have a pitch for you.
Give me.
And please listen. Okay. So, all right. Here's how we're going to start our movie. Okay. Listen. We're out in the desert. It's sometime in the middle of the 20th century when a bunch of scientists could just be hired by the government to go out into Nevada and test new experimental technology. Our hero shows up, and he's so amazing. He's so much more than just a fighter or just a scientist. But it looks like the test goes horribly badly for him. Oh no, he's dead. But wait, due to his genius and cunning, he survived, even though he should be dead. Indiana Jones has survived.
Interesting. I'll give you pizza money.
Yeah, that's not bad. Finally with us, Brian Big Booty Ibbot.
Big Booty.
Big Booty.
Booty. Hello, prop department. Oh, good. I'm glad you called. There are a few things that I wanted to talk to you about. Got a second? Good, good. First up, I sent a request for some futuristic-looking holographic glasses, and I said, please make sure that when you send them that you wrap them in bubble wrap. Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. Well, I got them, and wait a minute, guys. Hold on. Stop the music, Scott. Stop the music.
Oh, wait, I can do that. Hold on. All right.
Is someone out there not having a good time?
I almost used this.
Is there someone out there? Someone out there crying in the darkness?
Is someone
crying? Oh, there he is. Can we get a spotlight on him? Can we get a microphone over there?
Yeah.
What's your name? Oh, it's upset Film Sack Twitter poster. What's wrong? Why are you crying? No. We are finally doing Buckaroo Banzai. You can stop tweeting us about. What else is wrong? No. I was mistaken about Jason Scott Lee, but I corrected myself further into the podcast. If you just Yes, we're going to bring up Mad Max Fury Road again because there's a scene in this movie that takes place in the desert. Oh, my God, you've got a lot to say that you send to at FilmSack on Twitter. Now, Scott, don't laugh. Don't be mean. We don't have to be mean.
Yeah.
We don't have to be mean. Remember, wherever you go, you can come up with a pithy saying just by stringing some words together. I'm gonna dedicate the rest of this intro to you, Peggy.
Aww. Dude, you now have to marry that Twitter poster.
Yeah.
Right.
That was great.
You have to go start a relationship with that person.
Yeah. I do now, yes. Oh, shit.
She has to get tortured by John Lithgow first, though, so be careful. Well done. That was one of my favorite Ibbot ones ever. That was very good.
It's for the win. FDW.
The movie is Buckaroo Banzai, Dude What Does Things in Space.
Across the Eighth Dimension.
Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension.
But
everybody calls it Buckaroo Banzai. So, okay.
This is going to be another one that three of us hadn't seen before.
Well, you would be wrong, I believe, because I think it's the weird man out, because this is a movie that was a gigantic cultural thing when I was in school. Like, I don't even know how old I'd have been. What was this, 84? Kind of, so I'd have been like 13, 14 years old. And at the time, if you were cool, you saw Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension, whatever.
Or so you told yourself.
That's what everybody said. And I didn't see it. I never went. I don't know why I didn't go. I didn't see it at all. This is my first viewing. So it feels like a part of my childhood or growing up, formative years, that I didn't actually partake in, yet it still has this cultural impact. Ibbot, you saw it, though, like then.
I did see it. I didn't see it in the theaters, but I saw it as soon as it came to video with my friend Scott Wagner. He and I rented it. And
Scott Wagner. Down the Curtis Mathis store.
Actually, he worked at Marshall's.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Close enough.
It's close.
Anyway, we rented it, and really about the only thing that we came out of it with were just a lot of repeatable quotes. I mean, we would say, shut up, monkey boy, or, you know, whatever. It would be use the term monkey boy a lot.
Yeah.
That might have been it, really, now that I think about it. I think that was the only one.
Surely you did use the one you used in your intro, which is, you know, no matter where you go.
Oh, we
there
did,
you are.
Yes,
surely you used that
did.
One.
We did use that one, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Isn't that a thing? That came before this, though, right? Wasn't that an old saying before this?
I think I remember hearing this in
popularized for our generation. Yeah.
And then a couple years later I'm going to bring it up, Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome.
Beyond Thunderdome, yeah, yeah. Yeah,
that was some sort of phrase in there. And I can't even remember who said it in Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, but I know somebody did.
Yeah. Was it
It wasn't. Cool. It wasn't.
Was this Maya running Bartertown? I mean, who?
No. Master Blaster was too busy running Bartertown. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Right. It's like, no matter where you go, there you are.
So this movie, this movie, I saw it on cable after I had seen Back to the Future. So I erroneously thought growing up that this movie lifted from the other. But the converse is true. This is 1984 when this arrived on the scene.
Yeah, but how are they even remotely connected other than
If you watch this movie, I'm not 100% sure that this is the genesis of a lot of small ideas that were expanded upon in other movies, but I have a feeling that this was such a cult classic that it did inspire things that happened throughout the next decade.
I think it was a lot more like the trauma of its time.
Right.
Just like people didn't see it. It didn't really affect other filmmakers except to scare the hell out of studios into investing.
I don't think that at all. Everybody I knew had seen Buckaroo Banzai. And in 84, I was like 12. So a lot of people had seen it, but most of them saw it like I did on cable. And there was a lot of one-liners and a lot of good ideas. And this film, to me, is one of those films that the parts are way better than the whole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there somebody on Twitter said this to me. It says, yeah. I'm watching this movie right now for FilmSack, and here's what my take is. And they said that it's like a bunch of 10-year-olds got a hold of some cameras and a whole bunch of weird instruments and toys and just turned the camera on and got to film it and screw around and have fun. And that's your movie.
Well, and then also said to the principals, now look cool, now act cool, now say something cool. And those actors only had, you know, about half of a script to that, and they had to figure it out. You could, like, there were so many times when the person speaking on screen looked like they were figuring out what the character needed to be saying. You know?
Like they were like they were practicing their line. Oh, that was the take? Wait a minute, I was just...
Yeah, I think there was more... I think there was a lot of world building in either the writer's or director's mind, and actually probably the director, because if you read some interviews and things from those guys later on, they loved the ideas that were delivered to them about Buckaroo Banzai, and they spent so much time, I think, world building. They never actually went and set up proper shots or sets or really anything. It just seemed like they were having a lot of fun, like you guys said. It was just a, you know, they just, hey, let's film in this back room over here. Let's film in this warehouse, because almost all the locations were just incredible.
Like office
just,
building and
terribly uninteresting most of the time.
Mm-hmm. So is this a case where, and it's funny because we talk about world building so much on the show and how cool it is and how great is the, you know, setting up, giving you so much background on a place, but not spelling everything out for you. Do you think they did too much of that in this case? Like,
I think they knew too much about their world and didn't know how to express it. I feel like they spent a lot of drug adult nights, you know, talking it out, you know, just going. Yeah. It's like, well, I read this thing in Science. And it's like, I feel like they really thought about this a lot, but I don't think they came to any, any
sense. Yeah.
Yeah. If they had, they would have had the sequel they promised at the end of the movie. Like at the end of the movie, the credits roll says, come back for more Buckaroo Banzai. And they even had a title for the next film. I forgot what it was.
The Atomic Pirates or something. I can't remember.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some weird thing like that. And
I'll tell you what it was. I was like, I put it in.
When I saw that, it was like, wait a minute.
But that's not always
against the World Crime League, the WCL.
The World Crime League. That's right. Yes.
That thing at the end is not always a studio who doesn't know how bad their film is about to flop. Sometimes that's filmmakers trying to bully the studio into going forward and making another one already.
Right.
Or maybe just cheeky, right? Because the whole idea of this movie is that we as the audience have stepped into an intellectual property that already exists. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
And
like it's a serial. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's like, is that just the bookend to what they were already saw? I don't really know if anyone...
I think they really did intend to make another movie after this.
Mm. Dreams, of course.
Yeah. I think, but I do think that they put that in there as like a, yeah, you know, this is a, it's kind of a funny name. It's cheeky, but we're really going to still do it. And even if we don't, we come up with another title for it, it'll still be kind of funny and it'll be like the Lost Story.
And years later, we'll claim to have complete ownership and we'll try to make our own TV show, but then the studio will sue us and tell us we can't do it.
Yeah,
and then we're like, it's been 30 years. Aren't you going to do anything with it? And they're like, whatever.
This is what's funny is this. We take this for granted now. So when a screen fades in the words, the Avengers will return, we just accept it as truth because that's what the MCU gave us. Every time it said, you know, Iron Man will return or whatever the words they always use at the end of these things, we all go, yeah, well, of course, we're getting sequels. This is a badass freaking thing. We're just going to keep getting these. And this felt like one of those. But when they don't happen, like the thing never got followed up, it's just a little sad. Right. A little part of you breaks inside and goes, oh, well, you know, even though I mean, honestly, this being my first viewing, it's not really fair. I know I recognize a ton of these actors. I recognize all these lines and things that everybody used because, again, it was this big, important part of 1984. But it's not the best, very
the
good.
The absolute smartest thing in this film is the casting to get these all these interesting actors and interesting cutting. Featured. Yeah, all these interesting features of actors and put them in here. And they're all just a little askew. We all kind of think, well, maybe they are aliens, you know. John Lithgow kind of looks like an alien, sure. And so I really liked the casting. I thought it was fantastic. Even Peter Weller being this almost kind of out of place, brooding.
I appreciate it. He's not charismatic enough to carry the thing.
Exactly. Right. It's hard.
I can't get over how we just watched a James Bond movie last week, and we had our sixth or eighth discussion on FilmSack about how you make a James Bond movie and how, you know, people have succeeded and people have failed and all that stuff, because that is what is going on here, is people try to take a new property and do a thing that sort of generally we're going to have action adventure, a lot of different concepts come together, good guys, bad guys, international intrigue, all that stuff. And they looked at Peter Weller and they thought, oh, there's our James Bond. And he just wasn't. Like, you have to ultimately hang a lot on that lead, you know, like we were talking about. And this is you find out just how, like, early on in the movie, you find out just how it's going to go when we really rush into a nightclub scene where Buckaroo Banzai shows up to play lead guitar and sing. And he struts onto stage, and the way they shoot it, you're like, wow, they're not even showing us who this is. This is going to be great. I can't wait. And then he gets on stage and he starts dancing in a circle. He starts spinning, going around and around and around. Right. And you're just like, who is this? This is not James Bond.
No.
Yeah. Really. No, he's not even the kind of character that kind of falls into success. He's not the kind of character who, you know, goes out like an adventure seeker. He's just kind of there as things happen around him. And you set him up as this, like, this almost Superman character. He's a rock star. He's definitely a
comic book character. I mean,
he is. But does he, the only thing he really uses of all of his talents is just his test pilot talent to fly the alien spacecraft.
To
solve the problem.
To solve the problem in the movie.
I agree with Ibbot here. I felt like he was barely in it. I feel like it, even though he was always kind of there, but it was more like the group effort was the character.
I kind of like Perfect Tom more.
Whereas Scott, I know you're going to agree with this. My God, John Lithgow is in this movie.
He's in it to win it. He's really like, going for it.
It's a John Lithgow film. Mm-hmm. It's shocking. I was not
already. It is shocking so many times.
I still don't totally
Jeff
fully.
Jeff Goldblum, though. Come on.
Bill Bloom, sure, but that cowboy outfit, what the frick were we doing with that cowboy outfit? That needed to change.
I mean, it's just like, you know, you've got to have your entourage of characters that are as flashy as the main character, in this case, way more flashy than the main character.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
Was it Mel Brooks kind of like influenced humor in some parts of this?
I felt some of that, not just because of the cowboy thing, and it looked a little like an outfit you might see on Blazing Saddles, but there was still sort of like a, I don't know, like a...
The Mel Brooks kind of a flavor there somewhere. I was trying to nail the comedy down, but it was like somewhere between slapstick and Mel Brooks, and I just couldn't figure it out.
Yeah. There's a perfect example of the other direction of influence that I'm talking about. I have seen every Mel Brooks movie many, many times. I didn't seen this. Mm-hmm. As I'm watching it, I got to thinking, oh, how did this influence Spaceballs? And the answer is zero, not
right.
even a little bit. Yeah. And that's what that's what I'm talking about. Like this film wasn't good enough to have any kind of like impact beyond the fact that it wasn't good.
Yeah. I still disagree. I think that it caused enough buzz. Everybody in my generation knew about this film. And I don't think anybody was trying to make this film, but I certainly feel like the ideas that were thrown out. I think, like I said, I ran in circles with a lot of people who liked making small films and stuff, and it was very influential as far as going. We all recognized that it wasn't the greatest movie, but it had really good parts that were just really good ideas. Yeah. I mean, even like the aliens. I mean, for 84, I thought these were pretty darn good. And it gave me such a real feeling of where the styling and the look of like they like stuff from They Live and then from Alien Nation later on.
Alien Nation. It's funny because there's a lot of stuff that I confused with this movie and Alien Nation.
Aliens look
For a while I was thinking, wait, was it the guys in Alien Nation all had the same name? Wait, what was the
yes it was. And so it was like, I don't know if they stole from other great material so much in this that it feels like maybe it was actually, you know, it just is a filter through, but it's the source material for me for a lot of things.
This is the problem, though. Like, not the problem, but when I was young and this thing was at its height, it felt like contraband. It felt like one of those things pre-internet where you all had secret knowledge about it, and you knew it was cool, and your parents had no idea it was cool, and that's how it would pass around. It would pass around between kids, and it was one of those currencies for the years of the mid-80s. And that's a weird phenomenon. I don't know if that even happens anymore. Like now, I guess it happens now, but it's like weird stuff on the internet, like a meme no one else has seen.
It's access to things.
Yeah.
Like the new app where everybody's in chat rooms. That's adults don't know about it yet. That's the I accidentally, how did I end up? I ended up on TikTok about 2.5 years ago.
And now China owns you.
I had to, my gosh, that thing. But anyway, I'm a
TikTok sensation.
That's right.
About 2 minutes. No, absolutely. I'm the opposite. I was a TikTok lurker like about 2.5 years ago. But we had a thing at work where we were just looking for emerging social media platforms you know, like trying to ask the question, is this going to be appropriate for our brand? Brands.
Sure.
And so anyway, I got on TikTok really early on in its rise in the United States. And then I gave up on it after, I don't know, like before everyone here jumped on it in the last 18 months. And where was I going? Oh, so there was a time when TikTok was clearly only college students who were clearly only trying to avoid being seen by adults, right?
Right.
And like Facebook was like that too. Facebook used to be for college students only. And like I can't help comparing movies to that. There's just a time now, you know, kids don't have media that they keep the adults from, but they have access to each other. They keep the adults.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like we as the, you know, the ubiquity of technology makes it easier for people to connect in a more personal way. It's the same phenomenon at the end of the day. Like us thinking that Buckaroo Banzai was somehow this special secret trick.
It was a high bar because there's no way our parents would watch more than 5 minutes of this movie and hang around. I mean, they're instantly going to be turned off, right? They're instantly
That's the other thing is they don't get it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's like, we're out of here.
Yeah.
You want to watch this stupid crap? We're out.
Yep.
If there's any boobies, turn it off.
Yeah.
What's weird is now my parents' generation is in their 70s and 80s, and I think they'd actually kind of appreciate it now. Like they would,
they probably would now.
More than they possibly could have in 1984.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. I could see that. That's weird. My mom was always pretty open minded to movies that were a little bit strange. She just couldn't do the violent stuff. So, speaking of Peter Weller, something like RoboCop was, you know, couldn't have that in the house. F that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that wasn't happening. But something like this, she would actually sit and kind of giggle at and say, "Oh, this is so weird." And but I could see why you like it. You're the creative one, like that kind of talk.
It's just not for me.
It's not for me. Glad you like it, though. But by the way, this director is mostly known for writing, not directing. He wrote only two things in his entire career. Directed two things in his whole career. The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai and Late for Dinner in 91.
Oh, yeah.
Everything else is writer credits. Like, listen to this stuff. Slither, freaking... Let's see. Big Trouble in Little China is the writer on that, which shares a lot with this in terms of the weirdness. He wrote a script for a announced remake of Big Trouble in Little China, which isn't being produced yet, but that's on the record here, is something that's happening. He wrote Needful Things, when adapted a Stephen King thing. Yeah. Like, the dude's got some work behind his belt. He also wrote Stealth, and that was a shitty movie, but let's not talk about that.
Yeah, we saw they wrote Film Sack, right?
Yeah. No, we haven't yet, but we need to.
Oh, we haven't?
Yeah, we need to.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm positive.
I could swear we watched it. Well, I've seen it.
I got a point at the Film Sack meta really, really quick, because I think it's amazing that in the last 4 weeks before this one, we watched Running Scared, Soldier, Battle Beyond the Stars, and a James Bond movie. And this movie feels like it's a mashup of them, perfect mashup of those.
It does. It does. There's even some fun mouth noises in it, which reminds me.
Oh, my goodness.
The other thing. But
great.
All right. So there's an interesting thing that we didn't get. Jamie Lee Curtis is in this movie, but she got cut. And here's why.
Yeah.
She played Buckaroo's mother in a flashback. The scene was cut out. The scene is available on a recent DVD.
She was getting
DVD.
Killed by Michael Myers at that time. So go ahead.
Exactly. She's busy getting murdered by a slasher. It's on a DVD release that's fairly recent, and it was released as an optional prequel to the theatrical version. Has a special feature. Jamie Lee Curtis is visible in a photo on the dashboard of the jet car, though, in the widescreen version. So
is interesting, because that changes everything. I did not know that until you just said it, but I wrote down in my show notes, I thought it was odd that they presented several times the concept of who I'm fighting for, or remember them. And it's like, you know, it's like a picture of a loved one on the something, wherever you're doing dangerous.
On the flight panel.
On the flight panel, exactly. And they did that in a couple of different places. Mm-hmm. But when he's in his truck, it's just a picture of him. And I'm like, wow, how centric is he that, you know, it's like,
right. I'm fighting for myself.
What matters to me? Me.
Yeah. That's narcissism at a whole new level.
Right. But now that I found out in the widescreen version that you can actually see his mom, that actually changes the character completely
This is the widescreen version on Prime. Mm-hmm. I just didn't notice it.
Prime.
Just didn't notice it. So,
anyway. I don't know. I looked at the dashboard. I didn't see her at all. Like I said, all I saw was him in a flight suit.
Well, now you have a job. You got to go back.
Yeah, there was a woman cuddling a baby, but I certainly didn't recognize it as Buckaroo Banzai.
Yeah,
I remember seeing a woman later, but it was on. I think it was on Lithgow's.
It was a baby.
It was a baby.
I thought the baby and the girl was on Lithgow's dashboard of some sort that he was doing something. Yeah. I can't remember. I'll go back and look. Yeah. It's interesting. I wrote it down.
Go back and watch. You know what? Dunaway does that.
Not my first viewing, nor will it be my last viewing.
Dunaway
and usually, like I've said, there's the parts of this movie are fantastic. There's lots of times where you just want to take a nap.
Did you notice thing didn't even have, it didn't really have a soundtrack? It had intermittent 80s things, noises? But for the most part, it was like quiet.
It had saxophone, had some Casio.
Yeah,
most
but
music
it was
in the beginning.
But it was all very, you know, There was no underlying theme to anything. It just there would be lots of moments of just, hey, we're gonna be quiet here. There's like nothing but talking, and then we'll drive the car.
It actually lends to the humor, though, because
I guess so.
Sometimes shuffling can be funny if you have a character who is being stoic in a scene and you're hearing shuffling,
walking noises or something.
Yeah, shuffling in the background of somebody, you know, acting a fool.
I agree, but also, like, I am trained to hear musical cues that tell me that there's something.
It's time to laugh. a little slide whistle, maybe.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, yes, obviously, there's farcical music cues, just in general, like, I am used to, I don't know, Desperate Housewives, you know, and like the little musical cues let me know that we're in a funny moment, not a dramatic moment.
Terry Hatcher's about to do something zany.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's what she did. She was a zany, zany lady.
So, and it was spectacular.
Yeah.
You mentioned Perfect Tommy Ibbot. And I don't know if he was being sarcastic or not, but Lewis Smith, I recognized him. I still recognize him, but I just don't know what else.
I don't know if I've ever seen it before, but he was a more compelling character, you know.
Yes.
Everybody was a more compelling character, except for maybe Reno.
Right.
You know what the story was with Reno, but Clancy Brown.
It was great.
Really liked. I wanted more of everybody in this film.
Yeah, I wanted more. I wanted more Dan Hedaya, dude. What are you doing over there, just hiding?
Dan Hedaya sitting there next to Schiavelli, right?
Yeah,
sitting there in the audience, and then and we don't see Dan Hedaya as an alien later, but we see Schiavelli a lot.
Yeah.
What'd you think about Peter Weller?
Schiavelli. Schiavelli.
What'd you think about Peter Weller's little crooning there? That little
him singing. I assume that was him.
That little moment.
That's fine.
What'd you think?
Yeah. It's fine.
Did you like that?
I mean, look, he's RoboCop, and he's that dirt sandwich movie or whatever it's called. Naked Lunch. Dirt sandwich.
Dirt sandwich.
Wait, what? Am I thinking of
a Miracle Whip.
Oh, yeah, Naked Lunch. He played Bill Lee in 1991. See, my only exposure to Peter Weller
early exposure to Peter Weller
would have been RoboCop and Naked Lunch. Beyond that, I didn't have any reference, so I didn't even know he was in this. This is like news to me.
What was he coming off of here? If I mean, because why did we cast
things like Peter Weller? Of Unknown Origin, Shoot the Moon,
nothing. All right,
guys, what you want, and Butch and Sundance, the early days.
Yeah, Kentucky Woman.
He directed 27 things.
Yeah, he's a busy boy.
Yeah, I mean, he's a much more talented. Well, I think he's talented, and I think that they just don't give him a chance to really develop the character in this one for whatever reason. And I'm glad he got RoboCop because of this, and it became something that I like a lot more for him.
Right. And I love him now. When he shows up in something now, it's just like he is a scene eater now. He's great.
He just did a YouTube video or some viral video where he talks about wearing a mask in COVID, and he keeps reminding you that he has a PhD and
yeah, he does.
Does he come across as intelligent? I mean, it does.
Peter Weller. Yeah. Heck yeah, dude. Have you seen anything with him lately? Because he was great in Longmire. He was amazing in Sons of Anarchy. Yeah. He played Charlie. Yeah. He's just a great, crusty old piece of shit. He's in those newer Star Trek stuff, the JJ versus Star Trek movies. He's great in those, or the second one anyway.
All right.
And they labeled Buckaroo Banzai, Peter Weller's character, as a brilliant neurosurgeon. Shouldn't that be like the lowest bar? I mean, I don't want an ordinary neurosurgeon. Do you want a regular? Does anybody want a regular?
Right. Shouldn't all neurosurgeons just be brilliant?
I know. I mean, it should be like right in the front of it.
That should be a default state for a neurosurgeon.
Yeah, right. I mean, exactly. Like, you know,
anything awake, less than exceptional.
Awake toll booth operator.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, there you go.
Can you give me a Trump alert on this? I'm just going to list it.
Sure, I'll lay it into you right here.
He is a neurosurgeon, physicist, music star, spiritual guru, commando squad leader, globetrotting adventurer, geopolitical consultant who fights hostile aliens, performs rock and roll on multiple instruments, test drives interdimensional experimental vehicles, advises world leaders on how to prevent nuclear war, and studies the unknown.
Which makes me ask, what is he running from?
Exactly. That's exactly right. That's too much. That feels like Kim Jong-il. You know what I mean? You're just lying.
I see it as, you know, Superman syndrome, where it's like, all right, so he has every power. Great.
He never uses
any of it in this movie.
No, like,
what's
he's just standing around. I totally agree with Ibbot on this.
Stylist? He uses that a good bit. I mean,
He doesn't do. He really doesn't do anything. Like, it's all the cool things that he's done, he did before this movie, because they don't show any of it here. It's all like, hey, he's a surgeon. Okay, I'm impressed. He can do the testing.
Like, what if
science.
He, you know, like something he had to do where he had to use, operate on the ship, like he had to operate on a person, and it's like, oh, only Buckaroo Banzai can do this, or he needs to be able to strum a guitar chord that busts Big Butte's ship.
Big Butte, but isn't he risking everything?
Is he?
He's risking everything.
What's he risking? I don't know. What does he have? We don't know what he even has. He's got these friends that look like a bad 80s band, and And he's got,
and they are bad 80s band.
Like, what else is there?
They look like it. They are.
And by the way, one of them is played by Billy Vera. I think that's so funny.
Right. Yeah. Right. Of Billy Vera and the Beaters.
Yeah.
Like years before he asked us, what
would you think if I said at this moment?
So hold on a second. Is he the blonde one? That is.
No, he's not Perfect Tommy.
Who am I thinking of?
Reno, isn't he?
No, that's Pepe.
Reno, Nevada. Yeah, that's Pepe Serino.
Pinky Carruthers is, yeah.
Okay. I know which guy that is. Yeah. All their names are dumb. By the way, if you're wondering what that, if you're wondering what that's from, so the overall concept of this thing is clearly like Doc Savage, the old pulp comics from the 30s and 40s.
That's a good one.
The main characters are all multi-talented surgeons, adventurers, musicians, and both have an inner circle of sidekicks with nicknames. In the Doc Savage books, it's Rennie, Ham, Monk, and Long Tom. Don't want to meet that guy in an alley. And in this one, and Johnny. And in this one, you got Reno, New Jersey, Perfect Tommy, and Rawhide. So it's totally lifted from that Doc Savage stuff, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Except Doc Savage did something. He always did stuff. Whereas Dinky McGinky here, Buckaroo Banzai, didn't do shit. He just kind of walked around and went, hey, I'm the sort of the most handsome here. Although, I got to say, Clancy Brown's a good-looking dude in his prime.
Wow. He is. Yeah, actually looked really good. And Ellen Barkin, Tina walked in. She missed like the first half of the movie, so I had to explain what was going on.
Oh, God. How did you get all that?
30 seconds.
Some weird crap happened. Sit down.
But she's like, wow, who's that hottie? And I said, that's Ellen Barkin. And, the most recent thing I think we've seen Ellen Barkin.
I didn't know she was
in
a twin.
What? She's not a twin.
The most recent thing we saw Ellen Barkin in was Ocean's 13. Yeah. 13? Where she co-runs the hotel with Al Pacino. Anthony Pacino. Right.
Anthony Pacino.
Anthony Pacino.
Anthony Pacino.
Hold on. Ellen Barkin is
lesser known, the Pacino brother.
Her most recent thing is she's in that Animal Kingdom series, and she's Hollywood Mom, whatever that was. Yeah, not a lot of stuff lately, but yeah, I feel like I haven't seen her since forever.
Odd,
been ages. Yeah.
Such an odd character that they never really explored, other than, I mean, they just took the trope, which is
the damsel in distress, like just rode that into the
right. I mean, she was the damsel in distress, but to the extreme. And if she had a superpower, it would be like being a super extreme damsel in distress, as well as the she's the dead lover. You know, she's returned back some way or another. Apparently, you know, Buckaroo Banzai just explains it away by going, "Oh, there's no mystery here. Don't even think any further about it. You know, you were just a twin that was orphaned or something." So that kind of wiped that whole supernatural thing away, which I kind of thought was interesting. And also kind of thought was kind of sad. And I was like, okay. And they never got a chance to really explore any love interest, but they had like these hints of a love interest. It almost felt as disconnected as, what am I thinking of? The Giant Plant, the AIDS People, had Rick Moranis in it. Oh. And it was a musical that Steve Martin did.
Little Sharp Horse.
So it's almost kind of like that. It's kind of like that. They have an interest in each other, but they never actually express it. I mean, they talk about it, but they never actually do anything about the relationship.
You know, the description earlier, I think Scott gave it of 10-year-olds kind of, what if we made a movie? It really holds true with that thing too. Like, oh, and he'll have a girlfriend, but she's going to die. And then he's going to spark kiss her back to life. And
Oh, there's the thing he did. He got electrocuted and carried around that spark thing.
That was the point. And he did that by accident.
Yeah.
As a result of him being aware of a power that he had and using it for good. Like the only thing he does that's of of that sort of ilk is go to a jail and talk to a person that he misunderstood and get her out of jail.
No, not just any jail. Woman's prison. Call it what it was.
Therapist. He's a therapist. That's what he is. He's a therapist.
Yeah.
You need to talk to Buckaroo.
Yeah. By the way, the oscillation overthruster device that he would keep going to talk about reappeared as a spectral analyzer on Star Trek: The Next Generation in 87.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the exact device, which is pretty great.
It's kind
of
cool.
They showed another device too, and it looked a lot like the flux capacitor.
Yeah, well, it was kinda, yeah, the triangular thing in his jet car. I noticed that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even the car kind of reminds me of the first run through of the DeLorean.
Yeah, a little bit. It also was, I don't know, had kind of that first screenshot you shared in our chat Mad thing.
For sure.
It looked like a video game. I was like, what video game are you playing? That looks like some kind of cool post-apocalyptic.
Yeah, it was a worm's eye view behind one of the most satisfying scenes in the film to me is him being out in the flats, and it's after he's gone through the dimensions, and he just rolls out of the vehicle and just rolls in the ground. They get this great worm eye view of him kind of like rolling into frame, and the car just slowly rolling, and you're hearing the crunching. I mean, I thought that was just one of the most.
It was great. I think the first 20 minutes of that movie are great. I think I put into our thing. I said, "Oh my gosh, I'm really enjoying this so far." It kind of goes weird after that, but. Yeah. That's an understatement, but
once you get Mike Ehrmantraut and getting John Lithgow in jail, that's kind of where the movie just goes sideways.
Yeah, it just gets weird.
I did have to pause the movie and have a talk with my brain because it starts with him. First of all, he doesn't know if the interdimensional Ford truck. It was a Ford truck. Oh my God.
Was it Ford? I thought it was a Chevy. I kept trying to figure it out because I like the emblem like a Chevy, but the truck kind of like a Ford. And I was like,
why couldn't we have made that cooler? That car cooler. But anyway, the interdimensional Ford truck, he doesn't know if it's going to work. He could just be committing suicide for all he knows. And I don't think someone this talented and worldly is going to just go, throw his life away for the
experiment.
But okay, sure. But I had to stop the movie and go, okay, but what's the deal with driving into the pile of rocks that they kept calling a mountain wall? I don't like what
they talked about it later.
Could he have, it was really just achieving an alignment of the lasers to get him into the other dimension. He didn't actually have to go through something.
Right. He's going through matter the whole time. That's what you do when you are on the surface of the earth. You're going through the matter of the atmosphere. So it just bugged me that they had to have this thing with the pile of rocks that they call a mountain.
Well, the reason why is because they had to have the little explainer later on. Once again, not good science. But
terrible. And that's what I'm saying.
Apparently I missed that part.
I had to stop the movie and tell my brain, okay, give up, man. Like you go for the ride here and don't think about this too much. And then I kept doing it. And I wish that the movie had satisfied my urge to check my brain at the door, but it couldn't. It could not.
That's because they kept asking you to somewhat like some of the chatter early on when they're prepping for the test flight of the jet truck. It's actually they use just enough terms to almost make it plausible, but without sounding that was really hard because it's hard to make all those checks sound like real things without sounding stupid, and they kind of pulled that part off. And so it almost feels like your brain wants to engage, like it almost wants to find traction, but then, like you said, they jerk you out into some weird thing like when he like jerks off the track and he takes off the track so that he can go in a different direction. I'm like, well, you sped up the film and it just looks stupid because that's not how it would angle out of there. And it's just like, yeah. But then once you said, rustle your brain down, sell down brain.
Yep.
It's hardly the least feasible thing in the film.
Right. Like Yakov Smirnoff. That was like, what?
Yakov Smirnoff for like 5 seconds bringing over a TV. Yeah.
Yeah. What was that? Was weird.
He's Baklo Banza. He's on TV for you. What a country.
Always forgiven.
All right.
There's actually a time in the history of entertainment when there was literally two Russians. in all of English, the Western world, English-speaking entertainment had two Russians, and one of them was Yakov Smirnoff.
Yeah, what was the other one? The dancer guy?
Who was the
guy?
Other one, yeah.
Was it the dancer dude from White Knights? Is that who you're thinking of?
Oh, Mikhail Baryshnikov?
Yes, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Mikhail Baryshnikov.
I think you're right. Those were our two... Those were our two go-tos for Russian entertainment. You're right. It's so
you
funny.
Want the Russian? You have two choices.
you have dance. You have funny comedy man.
Yeah, funny comedy man. It was never that funny. Anyway, hey, I got some scrutiny.
Scrutiny.
All right, I'd like to throw a little scrutiny at this particular piece of trivia. It says this. This is the complete quote. Ronald Lacey was dubbed by a well-known American actor. That's the whole post. You don't say that and don't tell us who it is.
Tell us who the well-known American is.
Yeah.
So Ronald Lacey was the president on the traction bed.
Right. Oh, I don't get that either, but okay.
And we don't know anything more about.
No, nothing. It just says a well-known American actor. And are we to just assume, like, is it so well-known that anybody anywhere would just go, oh, yeah, of course, he's it's freaking, what's, you know, we don't know. You know, maybe put trivia in here. This stuff is sourced by, you know, readers of IMDb. So whoever did that, freaking shame on you, dude.
And he was Todd. Is that why you had Indiana Jones in your intro?
What? Which one? Oh.
No, I had Indiana Jones in my intro because that movie, the fourth Indiana Jones movie, was made like 15 or 20 years after this one. Right. How dare they?
Like, well...
This here's the thing. Altered the earth for that.
That actor was Tot. Was you know the circular glasses wearing melty guy from Raiders of the Lost Ark?
Yeah.
There were other things.
I didn't make that connection. Holy cow!
Yeah, I didn't either. But that was how many years previous? That would have been 81.
Two, three. Yeah, 2 years.
Right. Yeah, two, three years is all something like that. Yeah. That guy would, there were some Asian stereotypes going on a couple times in this movie. Where
are you going to mention Hori Torito?
Yeah, Hori Torito.
It's certainly compared to other films of that same time period was pretty, you know, they didn't go too far.
No, I mean, they're way worse examples. That. Yeah, if you're looking for worse examples in the 80s, we can give you some worse examples.
One Duck Dong, sure.
We've seen way worse than this, but
do we have a what gross got out the most? Because I have two guesses.
There definitely is one here. I'll go ahead and play it.
Gross.
What do you guys think?
It's either when Buckaroo Banzai steals a lollipop from the girl that's walking around. In the before they watch the holographic video,
right.
Or it's the spit trail that connects Ellen Barkin's lips to the bottle when she's crying in the nightclub.
That's a good one.
You're really close. There's still one.
Was it just John Lithgow's asylum? Because that whole area was full of nasty.
Oh, putting stuff on his tongue, putting the electrodes on his tongue.
Yeah, that was gross, but still not quite there. Yeah, any guesses? Any other guesses? Randy, you got anything?
The whole movie was so gross.
Pretty nasty.
A lot of slime and
Okay, for me it was lick your hand and then mash it on the Japanese guy's forehead. That's gross.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that. That's not bad.
Yeah, it's gross. Yeah. It's freaking gross is what gross. It is. So don't do that. All the other those are all good calls though. Good runners up. But for me
I thought for sure we'd get a spit trail gif in the the Film Sack Discord.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Ugh. Yeah, you know now that you say it again, that's a bad one.
That's when you just do another take. You're like, spit trail, let's do another take on that.
Are spit trails ever effective? No. And the only time a spit trail's ever worked for me is for an upcoming recommendals I'm doing on TMS this week for a show I won't reveal because I don't want to spoil it for Brian, but
too late.
It's there's a spit trail use in it that I think actually works, and I am
spit
hard.
Trail is actually a character in the movie.
His name is Spit Trail. But no, it's like I think it's the only time I've ever seen spit trail used in a way that worked for me and that didn't just completely disgust me. So
Brian, I'm holy Toledo, I'm excited.
Right. This was an actor named Sal Iva. It was the name of the actor.
Salve Iva. They just called him Spit for short. Yeah.
How much of their writing meeting do you think they spent thinking up John?
Did he have a meeting?
Yeah, I think they had a couple of meetings, and it was mostly It's mostly booze and figuring out last names for Johns. Mm. What do you think?
It might be. No, I don't think they took much time on that stuff at all. I think they just sort of
John Big Booty.
Up.
That's a pretty good one. Booty, excuse me, Booty. It's got that. It's got that slash.
No, I mean Big Booty was a lot funnier back then.
Yeah. Yeah,
it didn't. It wasn't the subject of a thousand rap
songs. What about John Smallberries?
Yeah, Smallberries.
John Smallberries, I think, was the best one. Okay. But they really weren't trying when they like at John O'Connor.
Yeah,
right.
I started out watching this movie with my 10-year-old, and I didn't realize that it was a PG before they invented PG-13. I didn't think. Oh, I wonder if this is actually a PG-13 movie, and it just hasn't gotten to that rating yet. But it wasn't for him. It was a little mature for him, mm-hmm. and so I stopped after about 30 minutes and watched the rest of it without him. Right. But up to that point, he had thoughts, and they were all about things like all of these characters named John. He was just like, it's like they were trying to make a bad movie. That's my child.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, you're right. Like, that's supposed to be a joke, yeah. right? It's supposed to be funny, yeah. but it's never.
They're all named John.
Yeah, no, that sort of thing gives me hope in the future, because it means that our kids are less and less fooled by stupidness. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
yeah. you can see through yeah. it, and it's not. Like he can hear that and go, yeah, that's just too easy. It's too easy. Like,
well, and that's primarily I have hope because my kid has grown up watching such high concept, highbrow kid stuff like yeah. Steven Universe and Gravity Falls and so on and so on. Like, mm-hmm. Because of that, he has expectations, you know, and I'm glad for that. I want that.
Oh no, that's great. That's my kids. I feel that way about my kids as well. It's like they're older, obviously, but they grew up on stuff that was just better for their brains than the stuff we had. And I don't mean some kind of moral judgment. What I'm saying is in the 80s, we had Super Friends and it was ridiculous. You know, we had right. other bad mm-hmm. cartoons. What did He-Man teach us? Nothing. It taught us nothing.
What?
Even the PSAs didn't teach us anything.
Wait, did you just say He-Man taught you nothing?
He-Man taught me nothing, Dunaway. Argue the other side. Tell me what he taught me. What did he teach me?
My God.
No, you know what? It taught me how to be cheap and frugal with how many frames of animation I'm willing to use.
Right.
It taught me to conserve my frames. How about that?
I hear you, but I do want to argue the opposite, because He-Man wasn't really there to teach you a more complicated lesson than be good, good beats evil.
Yeah.
Like that's what, like, we just hadn't, it never had occurred to the people making entertainment for children that they needed to go past exciting and fun plus the most basic morals you can think of,
yeah.
you know, and that's fine. Like it didn't turn out a generation of psychopaths.
No, not at all. I don't mean that. I just mean it's such an oversimplification and has zero nuance. Like it's just, you know, let's use G.I. Joe, for example. Cobra bad, G.I. Joe good. Done. Mm-hmm.
What are you talking about? There's a whole segment at the end of each of those episodes that tells you something.
What they learned.
Yeah, which is horseshit.
What the lesson of the episode was.
Because all that was an FCC requirement that they used some of their time to do a PSA, and they were all throwaway PSAs. They were not good.
It's a tack on. Somebody sitting in a writer's room going, oh, God, how are we?
Whatever. We were all high on sugar cereal anyway. Did it matter?
That's exactly right. No, it didn't matter. Yeah. We were high on sugar cereal. Like I say, the goal was to keep us occupied in front of a television. And I'm just really glad that the goals have gotten better.
I also feel like the something like G.I. Joe never had consequences. Everybody ejected safely. Nobody died. And it was all everybody was safe at the end, including the bad guys.
Even Cobra Commander.
Cobra Commander. Even the other guy that was the metal guy that ran around with him. I forgot his name.
Oh, my gosh.
I can't think of his name.
Can we, Destro, please have
Metal Face.
Destro, can we please have some 80s trivia on the next Battle Royale?
Hold on. I know, Destro. I've been watching it. I just forgot for a second. But anyway, the point is this. Like, I love that stuff. Don't get me wrong. It's some cheese and it's great. But there was no fallout. Like, nothing really had consequences.
Yeah.
The comic books, yes, those are different.
God, I was 8. I didn't need to know about that.
But that's my point. There are things for 8-year-olds now where I'm not saying they're showing horrible deaths and loss, but they are touching on issues that kids need to understand or help understand.
I actually worry about that. Turn the TV off and talk to your kids.
Yes, I actually worry about that. I worry that Steven Universe is presenting too many adult themes too early to people. Like, gosh, that show is so full of every possible emotional disaster that you can foist onto every character, you know?
Yeah.
At the same time, it's also fun. Like, they're coming up with original music, which is something I don't remember ever being presented with as a kid.
No, you know, like, it's all repeated when you were a kid. It was all cheap.
Yeah.
The other thing too is this is an important part of this discussion, and then we can move back to this other dumb movie we watched. But the people that are making the new stuff now, the Steven Universes of today, the Adventure Times of the today, whatever, SpongeBob, whatever, Husky. All of those guys and ladies are of our generation. They're the ones that grew up with She-Ra and He-Man. They're the ones that grew up with Super Friends and, you know, Brave Star and all those dumb cartoons.
Hey, and Brave Star wasn't dumb.
But hold on a second. So now here they are in their time now making something more nuanced. I don't think that's a surprising thing because they grew up with the inspiration of what they saw and they want to take it further. I think that makes total sense to me. Now back to Brave Star for just a second. I like Brave Star a lot. I think it's great. It's He-Man in space, basically, with a sheriff and a talking horse, and it's great. I love that show. But
what did you think about Thundar the Barbarian?
I like it also, but none of it's
carefully.
But go none ahead. Of it's good. It's not good. Not really good. You. I mean, it's cheesy good. It's fun good. It's dumb good. But there's
not Thundar the Barbarian.
It's not. It's like the original Space Ghost, and I don't mean Coast to Coast, which is what most people associate with Space Ghost.
Right, no, but the actual original Space Ghost.
Garbage. Yeah, it was horrendous. Like, it's so bad. But I love that they exist. Together, yeah. I don't want them to go away, you know? I want that stuff to be available.
Would you have watched a Saturday morning cartoon of The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension? Would you have watched that?
Oh, yes.
Oh, totally.
Yes, I would have.
For sure. Yeah.
I think
I'd watch it today if it were done by the right people.
Yeah.
And that's actually the whole point, is that the time moves on and these things sort of can end up looking really bad because they're locked in the past. But like I promise you 20 years from now, like Justified will look so old and like corny and like the acting could have been so much better. But at the time, a show like Justified comes along and we're like, this is awesome. This is like if somebody thought about Walker, Texas Ranger and made it actually have a story and so on, you know, and like that's just how media works. Where you know, like I promise you, Buckaroo Banzai made just 2 years later would have been such a better movie. You know what I mean?
Like the exceptions of like things like if you look at it in movies, like the Godfather movies, the first two anyway, and like Apocalypse Now. I'm not trying to just stay in that same director's thing here, but those movies look like they were made yesterday and they hold up. They don't feel
dated. I'm not saying as you go back in time things get bad. That's not clearly not true.
Right.
I actually think FilmSack, just talking about our meta, FilmSack's existence is to prove that you can love movies and watch movies of all tiers of quality and still love movies.
And have a good time. Also, let's get more meta, one layer down. You can go listen to really old episodes of FilmSack and still have a good time. Those early episodes are fun. So... hey,
you may be able to. I can't. I listen to them and I go, my God.
Yeah, that's how I am with ELR. Any ELR stuff.
230 pounds?
Early instance, early old ELR stuff, I can't do. I can't listen to it.
Right.
Hey, Brian Dunaway, you will not make fun of people who weigh 230 pounds.
Hey, I weigh 230 pounds and I sounded like it.
Dream of a day. I wish 230 pounds. Like,
do I sound like I weigh? Jesus.
No, not at all, but I did. I mean, I wore my fat around my throat apparently because I go back and listen to it, it's like
I mean I'm at 243 right now. I'd love to be back at 230. That'd be great, but I'm
only 5'10", so
yeah, I'm 6'4". It's different when you're taller, you weigh more. That's what I've learned.
Right.
All right, chick in the bucket. Here's what I think it is.
Grab a bucket.
It's the watermelon that
they talked about it. They actually talked about the watermelon, right?
But they didn't explain it. Right?
Right.
Because Jeff Goldblum walks in and goes, what's with the watermelon? He goes, oh, it's a long story. I'll tell you later. And then they never say anything about it again.
Never explain
that. That was a gag.
So it's actually a trope. This is a trope. Like, this is not an example of a trope.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Like, this is a trope. When you make a joke out of pointing at something, and then you never explain it. Like, we're supposed to just laugh.
Wasn't that just the reverse
of the Chekhov's gun? Right. It's the. You'll never see that again.
Chekhov's inside joke.
Yeah. Chekhov's nuclear wessel. I don't know. I have no idea what I mean.
Go ahead.
The trope itself is called Cow Tools. It's based on a Gary Larson cartoon about a comic about a cow standing in front of their workbench, right?
Yeah.
You got so much flack over it.
He did.
Right,
explain
it.
Yeah.
So there's two explanations here about why is there a watermelon there. So one, Team Banzai had a zany scheme to end world hunger via airdroppable watermelons, and they only realized they'd blown a fortune after successfully cultivating a watermelon that required industrial equipment to cut, right? Because it has to be strong enough to survive the drop. So out of universe, the production team was so tired of the executive meddling going on in the filming of the movie that they started shooting crazy scenes just to wear out the execs and make them leave. Yeah. So the watermelon scene came and went with no fanfare, and they realized they had achieved protection from the editors and could proceed to do whatever they wanted.
Mm. Nice.
There you go. Well, that's well formulated.
Researched.
All right. Researched.
I think we can do some. We have some clips here. Would you like to hear them? These clips.
Oh my gosh! I was so curious about the clips because at some points I was like, "There's gonna be nothing to capture." And other times I was like, "Wow, all kinds of weird noises."
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, right.
It's not as many as usual, but there's a few. Let's start with this one from Jeff Goldblum. This line is as Jeff Goldblum-y as you freaking get. Enjoy.
See, this is the point where, for me, it started to look like a problem. I mean, you know, I wanted to sacrifice the precentral vein in order to get some exposure. But because of this guy's normal variation, I got excited, and all of a sudden I didn't know whether I was looking at the precentral vein or one of the internal cerebral veins or the vein of Galen or the basilar vein of Rosenthal. So on my own, me, at this point, I was ready to say, that's it, let's get out.
All that was missing was just a few, weird hesitations and stuff.
And I want to believe, just because of all the stuff we've seen Jeff Goldblum in, that that's a completely improvised line.
Right, right. He studied and memorized all of that.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, he's just the same in everything, and don't ever changes all on
exactly
at. Yeah, this was the same year, by the way. Was it 84? I think 84 that he was in Silverado. He's great in Silverado, by the way. Great in that. Plays some city slicker dude who comes to town and has a gun in his pants. He's great.
Has a gun in his pants.
Yeah.
Or is he just glad to see me?
Or no, right. it's not his pants, his pant leg, like his he could quickly kick his foot up and his
ankle holster kind of thing.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. He must have saved some of that skill because he did a little gun spin.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, yeah, it was yeah. Little right.
He was a cowboy
around the gun. Yeah,
mm-hmm. In that movie, he dressed like a proper cowboy though. Not this weird thing he was in here. This
freaking, what are you saying?
This woody ass looking whatever that was he was wearing. All right, Clancy Brown speaks.
Dr. Banzai is using a laser to vaporize a pineal tumor without damaging the quadrigeminal plate.
A little bit of Kane, a little bit of... Dr.
Banzai.
Yeah, a little bit of Mr. Krabs in there. I can hear it. okay, let's see. I don't know what this is.
This is Chase One. We got his tracks. They go right up to a wall of rock. Holy shit!
I love that.
That guy.
Holy shit!
He's great. He's excited.
Yeah.
And it feels very much like you've used him in previous clips in different podcasts.
It does feel that way, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. It feels like the bees, millions of bees guy.
Oh, totally does. Mm. He right down to like he sounds like he's on a phone kind of thing, like on a speaker kind of thing.
Yeah, isn't that weird? That's weird to me. But anyway, he's great. We'll use this all the time.
Holy shit!
All right, moving on to our first taste of some some pretty bad Asian stereotype voices. Here you go.
Holy Toledo.
Holy Toledo.
Holy Toledo.
What's that behind him?
Holy Toledo.
Oh, it was the machine.
Oh, was that the machine? I thought that was him riding off with the motorcycle.
Well, it was like a blah, 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 blah.
Chainsaw almost.
Holy Toledo.
Yeah,
I think you're right.
Yeah.
No, it's actually just a guy back there going, going raspberries with it.
Yeah.
Really is.
Look, practical effects. That was the way in 84. That's how we did it. Here's John Lithgow making noises. All right. There's that.
Man who's made career out of being weird.
Yep.
Beautiful.
Jonathan Banks, a.k.a. Mike Ehrmantraut, shows up.
Cheer up, Lizardo. It's Friday, and our care package from your yo-yo friends.
A few.
I want to believe that Banks sounded like that when he was 16, right? Like, he always has sounded like Mike Ehrmantraut.
You know he probably did when he was, you know, when his voice dropped one day. Everyone was like, whoa, listen to that guy.
Dad, I really want to borrow the car.
Can I please have the keys to the car, Dad?
You just made me realize that Lithgow has an old man actor career ahead of him.
Yeah. He's where doing
he,
it
where
now.
Where he stops being weird. Yeah, and he's like, he becomes like, I don't know, like he wins an Oscar for playing a crotchety. He becomes Clint Eastwood, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, he's pretty close to that now. He's kind of almost touched on some of those already.
I mean, he's in his like the late 60s or 70s.
The most recent reboot of the Planet of the Apes, the first one.
Yeah.
I mean, when he plays, he has Alzheimer's. I mean, he's right on the cusp of greatness.
He was great in there.
The same year as Footloose.
Oh, like, weird.
The kids, telling the kids not to dance. But I do remember seeing him in The World According to Garp as a cross-dressing friend of Robin Williams.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Weird to think.
Like,
that
he's like the only one who can play that character, you know, at the time.
Yeah, at the time, sure.
And like the old man who's somehow interesting to the Academy. You know what I mean? Like that's something that a lot of people go for.
Well, he's got a number of nominations already. He's probably headed toward that. The thing you're saying. He was great, by the way. Quick recommendation in that first season of the new Perry Mason thing that's on HBO. Yeah. Played an aging lawyer in that, and he was fantastic. And I say played because maybe he won't be there season two. I'm just saying.
And I said played because that would be a spoiler.
Because his character may not still be around, but he was great in it. All right. Here's and remember when he was Churchill in that Crown thing on Netflix?
Oh, yeah. Man, such a
so good
transformation.
Total transformation. Well,
that was the one
Wikipedia
he got.
It talks about him and his wife separating, and you know, when he had an affair with actress Liv Ullman in 1980, I'd go on and edit my own Wikipedia page if somebody put that.
Right?
Yeah, I'd do that.
Did you need to really put this on here? This is my ex-wife.
I'd do that. That's a good idea. Somebody edited mine and said, he steals all his drawings from other people, which I don't do. But anyway,
I'll
stop writing it.
Yeah. As a concept, like, one of the things that you have to get over when you learn to draw is that you're going to be just doing the same thing that other people have done.
Yeah. Well, if I draw Mario, I think this person's idea of stealing is that, he did he drew a version of Mario.
To be stealing.
Yeah, that's what I think he thinks.
Like, he drew a version of Batman, but it was fat, but it was still a copy of Batman.
It was Fat Man, but still Batman. Well, that brings me back. All right, here's this accent of Lithgow. It's pretty weird.
Not for while you can, monkey boy.
Okay, supposed to be Italian, I guess.
Like, yeah, there are points when he sounds Russian, and then other points where he sounds Italian.
So he sounds Italian before his entrance into the multi-dimension, and then he's possessed with, I assume, is a Russian version of the aliens.
Okay. Sure.
I'm not saying it's a good explanation. I'm just saying it was continuity was there.
In this film, that is a plausible concept that you just described. All right. Here is that thing Ibbot so eloquently used in his intro. Enjoy.
Hey, no. Don't be mean. We don't have to be mean. Because remember, no matter where you go, there you are.
Okay. Jeez, RoboCop.
Spoken by Pig Killer in, I looked it up, in Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome a year later.
Pig Killer. Yeah. There you go.
But a part of Buddhist principles, and that's where it was first.
Oh, that's why it's a thing I thought was universally used for.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. As I was looking it up, I kept running into people saying that there was like a fad of Confucius say jokes in the 70s.
Yeah.
And that this was one of them.
And a lot of those are made up. The most of them, if not all, you know, like all those Confucius say, it is better to buy a pizza than to eat it or whatever. You always knew
what
that stuff was
fake.
What is the
sound of one hand clapping?
Right. Yeah, that stuff was always like, okay, no one really said this, but boy, we sure had fun saying it. All right, here's, here you go.
John Big Booty.
Uh-huh. John Big Booty.
John Big Booty.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of funny that I just realized that he's in real life. He's a John himself.
Yeah, there were multiple Johns. Jonathan Banks, John Banks,
but he wasn't a. But he wasn't
a John in movie.
John.
I see what you're
John Lithgow became John Worfen.
Oh right. Good point.
Yeah. Right.
John Lithgow.
And Lithgow in Icelandic means big booty.
How have we not even mentioned? We haven't even said the name. Oh no, what's wrong with my brain? Who plays Doc Brown? What's wrong with me?
Christopher Lloyd.
We haven't even mentioned Christopher Lloyd today.
Right.
Destro.
Monkey Bar. Yeah.
It's weird that he hasn't come up. Right. I have some lines from him, but it's weird. All right, here's Jonathan Banks making a choking, dying sound. All right, I'll do that one more time just for those at home who are not paying attention. Okay,
there
you go.
Wow.
All right.
So science fiction and snails was a thing, apparently. In the last couple of weeks, we've seen a second reference to a snail-shaped thing in space.
That'll be on the stars. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, good call.
Oh, right. The ship itself was snail-shaped, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Amongst other things.
Oh, those drones. The ships.
That's like the most G-rated thing we can say it looked like.
Yeah, thing this week was, these are bad ship designs. What happened in the 80s? What were we doing? We were just bad.
I do kind of like the alien spaceship as being like just a big chunk of coral.
Mm. Yeah, I liked this the satellite spaceship that was kind of like in orbit. But then I guess the little pod that was supposed to destroy everything at the end. It was oddly shaped. That didn't bother me as much as the fact that it was pretty much the same color as the aliens themselves, which made me think it'd be weird to fly around a ship that was flesh colored. I don't know if that would.
Mm. Yeah.
Oh, weird. Yeah. Interesting.
Like a big Cronenberg ship.
Right.
It sounds to be the first time we've seen a movie where the main good guy kills the main bad guy's spaceship. Without even looking at it, like you're facing completely other directions,
yeah,
shouting
out.
That
was weird, right? That I had the same feeling. I was like, that has never been done.
It's an anticlimactic. All right, a little bit to the left. No, my left. No, your left. Okay, you killed it. We won. All
yeah, right. It would have been like the battle for Hoth. It would have been like Luke in the front, dude in the back. And if the dude in the back would have wasted something and Luke never saw it, it would have been like that. This is a very weird.
Are we done? Did we finish it? Yeah, did we save the world?
We rolled the end credits, which again, we didn't even talk about the end credits, but my favorite thing about the movie is the end credits.
The end credits are amazing.
Just this music video of everybody walking around the basin, the Los Angeles
It would be 10 years until Tombstone would do the exact same thing. The exact same walk.
Oh, really? Yep. Did they do that at the end of Tombstone?
They did, and they didn't have music like this. It was whatever, but it was while they ran the credits, said who was who, and people who had died during Tombstone, during the film, were back to walk in the group.
Oh, I like that.
Just
right, as though in the middle of the story, they had all taken time out to be together.
Yeah. That's kind of what the implication is, because Clancy Brown is dead in the movie. But here he is walking with everybody at the end. So
talking,
it's like it's like the "Build Me Up Buttercup" song at the end of "What's Happened to Mary" or whatever.
What's happened, Mary? To Mary?
Happened to Mary? How did Frank's get a bump
for Mary? There's something about Mary.
Destro.
That's all right. That's better than Naked Lunch and Dirt Sandwich. You did
Dirt Sandwich.
<you're> fine. All right. Speaking of Brian Ibbett, we got a clip here sent to me by, I think this time, from your mom. This is also prom night. I don't know where the hell she got all this, but this one's interesting because it seems like you were impatient with the girl and maybe her, you know, your advances were being rebuffed a little bit. And here's what you said to her.
I'd like to move this thing along.
There you go. So there's that.
You know, it's a lot of work. I wish somebody would assemble all of the Brian's prom night audio into a timeline, into a
nice.
Well, put them in a chronological order. And describe.
That'd be great. Jamie, we're looking at you, buddy. Get in there.
Yeah. When's the 10 year anniversary of FilmSack?
It's already
it's probably maybe 20 year. I mean,
we're heading toward episode 500, though. That's a pretty big milestone.
Yeah.
There's probably a name for what I'm about to call for, but that assemblage of clips needs to have some bow chicka bow wow music in it. What is that called? What do we call porn music?
Porn music, I think, is all
porn
we
music
call it,
is
right?
Adequate title. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Good. Thank you.
It was Destro.
I like porno. Yeah, Destro music. That's what we call it.
All right, porno music is absolutely, worse and better.
Worse and better at the same time. Yep. I used this earlier, but I like it.
Launch thermal pod.
Okay, launch thermal pod. Do that.
That's what he shot him from, the thermal pod.
The thermal pod. This music is really old and odd and weird, so here it is. Everyone get a Casio keyboard. We need theme songs.
Wait a minute. Is that from this movie or is that from Cobra Kai?
Yeah.
Do they use a lot of retro?
A lot of stuff that feels like that. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know if they'd do that or not. I really just need to watch.
And I don't think it's intentional. It's just happens. We can afford this.
It could be. All right, here's putting something down.
Got two guns in my hand.
Put one of them down.
Oh, the two rednecks. I love those guys. Oh, yeah. They were trying to make sense of that ball, and then the one guy threw the gun in the water. What a dummy. All right, here's another one.
I ain't putting the guns down.
I ain't putting them down.
It's another PG moment.
Ah, see, I told you. Leave it alone.
Okay, there's that. Here's Doc Brown. Here's a little Christopher Lloyd.
We'll just go ahead and start breaking it down.
Don't touch it.
Oh, geez. All right.
You could have told me that was from another Christopher Lloyd movie.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. Uh-huh. You cannot tell his characters apart.
Nope. And also, well, this is a year before Back to the Future. So his true life's work had not quite begun. You could go back to his career and go, oh, he was great in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, a little small part in that. He was great on Taxi. Like, that guy's great. Everyone loves Christopher Lloyd. He's a funny dude. But we
don't realize how, I mean, like, the very next year, he was absolutely white-headed for Back to the Future.
So, well,
I mean,
faked that.
He still had,
that wasn't his real hair.
Yeah, that was a wig.
No, but.
Okay. All right, just make sure we that was a wig.
Well, it was a wig. He wasn't that old. The thing is, he's now old enough to look like Doc Brown always looked. You know what I mean? Like, that's how we all saw Doc Brown. He's that now, I think.
Yeah.
But he, but that would be, you know, a moment for him. And this right leading up to it, this is just such a little whimper of a role. It's just like not a big deal. Although he gets to flip that dude off, or flips off John Lithgow in the most amazing way. Off.
It's the best flip ever.
Yep. Yeah. It's a great bird.
The most aggressive, that thing, you can feel the ammunition coming off of that thing.
And his arms are so long, it feels like. He's like, those normal length of arms? I don't know. That's just.
And that dude from, what's the Swayze Clay movie? Ghost. I was going to say with the ghost.
the Swayze Clay movie.
The one where he's making clay with the ghost. He's the ghost. Anyway, that guy's in that. The curly-haired, tall, weird dude. That actor. I can't think of his name.
Yeah, he's the angry ghost.
Yeah,
he's the one who
teaches
kick the can.
Exactly. Yeah. He's the one that looks the most like himself in the alien makeup.
It was weird. They did do this weird thing with the costuming that made them really look like the characters that were underneath. It was kind of impressive.
That guy died young. It bums me out.
Yeah.
Where is his?
I always think of him from Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, he was great in that. He was in one of the Matrix movies. He was at the train station in the Matrix. Was he?
Are you sure?
Am I doing that wrong?
Are you sure you're not thinking about Ghost? Because he was at the train station.
The train station ghost,
You know what? I might be thinking of Ghost.
I think you're thinking of Ghost.
Yeah. What didn't something happen at a train station?
I'm sure something at some point in one of the three Matrix movies happened at a train station.
Oh, here it is.
Oh, well, there's a big fight at the subway station.
Oh, he's in a show. He was in a show called Matrix in 1993, but that's not what I'm thinking of. I don't know, dude. But anyway, yeah, he died too early. He's only 57.
What about Carla's husband?
Carla's
not Danny Dan Hedaya.
Yeah.
you mean Tortelli?
Testro.
Nick Tortelli?
Tortelli. Yeah. There you go.
He's still around.
You know, Tortelli. He was hot off the heels of making his Tortelli sequel or spinoff.
A spinoff show.
Mm-hmm. Oh, was this right around then? That would have been.
No, I mean, it was almost the 90s. Way early for that.
Yeah, I guess you're right. That was a little later. I like that guy. Go see watch Blood Simple. It's an amazing Coen Brothers. Their first movie. Yeah. It's fantastic. All right. Alien voices are kind of cracking me up.
Hey! It's Buckaroo Banzai! Get him!
It's just so like.
Get him!
Get him! Nice jacket.
Hey man, nice jacket.
And I just like that guy.
Did that, be, that became a
running gag
or something? Yeah, isn't that didn't some band even take the name "Hey Man, Nice Jacket" based on that line?
Hey man, nice.
Filter made a song.
I've never heard that.
Maybe that's it. Maybe it's the Filter song. Yeah. Oh no, that's "Hey Man, Nice Shot."
Hey man, nice shot. Come yeah. on. Yeah.
Dang, you had me there. Hey man, nice jacket.
You gotta move. Nice. You gotta move your jacket.
That might be what I'm thinking of. Yeah. I'll fully own up to that. Let the Twitter post commence. But I totally was thinking of that Filter song.
That's amazing. Well, I can tell you the Filter song's cool because isn't he the brother? He's the brother of Patrick from the Terminator 1000 guy.
I'll tell you why it's cool, because it's the one of the intro song to Demon Knights, Tales of the Crypt, which is a fantastic film sack movie. We haven't watched yet.
There's also, we could go deep on Filter, but we don't need to. Who's the wise guy? Which is a funny thing to say in this movie because Jonathan Banks' not breakout role, but his big chance came from being on a show called Wise Guy on TV, and so that made me laugh. But anyway, here it is.
All right, who's the wise guy?
Oh, who is the wise guy?
The wise guy.
Who is?
Jeff being Jeff.
Where there was a huge electrical dimensional accident, some giant explosion, and they hypnotized Orson Welles into covering it up. So first he says there's an invasion from Mars, but then he says, no, it's just a radio show hoax. Get it?
He's so good at that. Oh.
Yeah, he's just...
He's so good at that. No,
step three.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's just so... You are going to have a dinosaurs on your dinosaur. This is so great. All right. Why? Oh, there's the why watermelon.
Why is there a watermelon there?
You'll never know. You'll never know. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Here's one for you. I like this.
Take her to the pit.
Take her to the pit.
Does not sound Italian there.
Nope. All right. Now here's the president. Let's see if we can figure out who the famous actor is, but also this is a weird way of saying something. So here's what he said, and then we'll talk about it.
By who by?
All right. By who by?
By who? By who by?
Now listen to that
clearly
again.
That's
by who by?
That sound famous?
Yeah, clearly that's Robert De Niro. Clearly.
By who by?
Oh.
I don't know who it is.
I don't know, but that mustache was not convincing me of anything.
No. Also, I felt like the actor changed along the way. It seemed like the body was different. The face was different by the end. I could be wrong.
Is it because he was upside down?
No. It was like, I can't put my finger on this. It almost like he changed races too. Like he just had a different... just look totally different by the end. I don't know. That's a weird thing. Everything about the president in Traction make no sense to me.
It felt very much, because at first it's been a while since I've seen it. And so I had forgotten a lot of the smaller scenes. I completely forgot about the president stuff. It's just so throwaway.
Yeah.
And he was talking to him and I was thinking, wait, was this who he was operating on at the beginning of the movie? I'm like, I've never caught that. And I'm like, no, he's just the president. In Traction, what does this? What they couldn't get? It's like they said, "Oh, we need a set for the president." Well, the Oval Office is going to be too much to build. How about we just do it in a hospital room?
Yeah, where he's in Traction for no good reason.
Right.
And what if we dub that guy's voice completely with some well-known actor? We're not going to tell you who it is. Like,
some mysterious well-known.
That would
really weird.
Great.
Really weird. All right, something about balls. Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
The voice is credited to an actor named Ronald Lacey. He has some things, but it's not like he didn't do anything.
Our scrutiny was well deserved here because come on, Ronald Lacey. Who the hell is Ronald Lacey? Do we know who that is? We don't know who that is.
I know.
I got to find out now.
Ronald Lacey played in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
And he played President Wildmark in Widmark in Adventures of Buckaroo.
He's got two claims to fame.
He played who in?
Todd, the guy whose circular glasses face melts. I'm gonna threaten you with a coat hanger. Yeah, I mentioned that earlier.
Okay, you did say that earlier. Now it's coming together. Let me play that again. Now let's see if we can hear it when I play it.
By who by?
Is that what he sounds like?
By who?
That's what somebody sounds like, but maybe not him. That's what some well-known actor sounds like.
But that's what they say that's the dub. That's the president.
No. I think they're saying the actor. Well, okay, maybe I'm looking at the wrong thing because it says Ronald Lacey, President Widmark, but doesn't say voice.
Oh. Right. Nobody over. At least they didn't say it.
Okay. So maybe we're
not a voice credit.
Yeah. The mystery remains.
Yeah.
We still
if there really is a mystery, if this isn't just somebody like putting garbage onto IMDb. Nobody's ever done that before.
Yeah, never happened before. Hell, we spawned a bunch of it, and we know how it works.
We know exactly how easy it is to put garbage on.
Yeah. He played like the priest in Red Sonja. We watched that, right?
Yeah, we did.
Sure.
Long time ago. Year one, I think.
Yeah,
oh my gosh, that's weird. All right, here's something about balls.
I'm glad someone has the balls to face facts.
Oh, that's the president also. Okay, I'm going to try again.
Maybe we can, let's see if we can pick out the words from there.
Let's test this out. Here we go.
I'm glad someone has the...
Hold on, let me play it again.
I'm glad someone has the balls to face facts.
No idea. No idea.
What a god, this person is present in really common clips that you play on lots of shows.
There is something... Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's something weirdly familiar about it. I don't know. I can't figure it out. So I'll play this instead. That's a good way to clear your throat. Wait, I don't remember who that is. Oh, I'm trying to find out what he's saying. It's one of the aliens, and I wrote, what is the name of the thing? Like, what is this? And I don't understand. Is he saying he's not here? I think he's saying he's not here.
Yeah, it
he's
is there like here. You're right. That's what it's got to be.
He's
here.
Having like something a Planet here. Of the Apes mask problem, you know, where you can't.
Right.
John Parker, take the wheel.
All right. Who approved this? I wrote.
Curse you, Banzai. Don't you realize what you're saying? Your whole planets are going to be destroyed and you sit here wasting time.
Hey, paisanos.
I felt like it was the mix of accents that really sold it for me. Like, wasn't just some bad Italian or bad Russian, but it was everything.
What the large pepperoni?
I think it's interesting that Christopher Lloyd would actually kind of play almost this exact kind of character in Who Framed Roger Rabbit later.
Ah, yes.
It's a very similar role. Just kind of a ridiculous accent over the top stuff. Big Booty, do your thing.
Big Booty, activate your probes.
Okay. That's a good one. All right, slow sucker down. I don't know what this is.
Slow this sucker down. I'll handle these birds.
Yeah, what does that mean? Slow this sucker down. I'll handle these birds.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that what you say when you're going to get all tough? And...
I don't think so.
Okay. All right, here's Dunaway's favorite character.
John! Smallberries.
There you go.
That's John Smallberries.
That's so good. All right. Well done. Now, where the hell did I go? Now I'm on the wrong page. Okay, now this right here. Oop. Film sack checklist goes like this. Ghostbusters goo on the car? Check. That accent belongs to no one? Check. And finally, that ship looks like it's made of red vines and spit. Check. Star Trek connections. There are a number of them, and I'm going to read them now. We got Vincent Schiavelli. He played John O'Connor in this, and TNG played the weapons salesman on Minos for the episode in first season called The Arsenal of Freedom. There's Robert Ito. He was Professor Hakita. He played Lieutenant Chang, who conducted Wesley Crusher's Starfleet Academy entrance exam in the first season.
No stereotyping in his career.
Nope, none at all. Peter Weller played Buckaroo Banzai, played Terra Prime leader John Frederick Paxton in the fourth season episode of Demons and Terra Prime. He was also Into Darkness and played Admiral Alexander Marcus. He's very good in that, menacing in that. Jonathan Banks, he was Lizardo... hospital guard in DS9, played Gollan Sheela in the first season episode Battle Lines. I did not know that. I gotta go watch Jonathan Banks in there.
See it. He's like leader of a resistance group. There's these two warring factions on a planet, and
he's leading one of them.
That's great. Christopher Lloyd, he played Big Booty.
John Bigfoot.
I saw boot and said foot for some reason. Anyway, Star Trek 3 played Klingon Commander Krooge and Lisa Lawrence Ferguson. She was Black Lectroid Commander. And TNG played Lutan on the first season episode of Code of Honor, where he uttered these words, you shall have no treaty, no vaccine, and no Lieutenant Yar.
All right.
That's that guy. Also, Carl Lumbly is credited, but I don't know which guy he was.
Oh, he was the Lectroid that helped them out. John.
Oh, wait. He's the one with the Rastafarian?
The Rastafarian. Wait,
John Parker? John Parker.
Yes. Yeah, John Parker.
What?
And now he plays a Martian Manhunter on Supergirl.
I love that. Yeah, he's great.
He plays the dad of Martian Manhunter.
In all the cartoons, he's the voice of, so that's funny that they did that on the TV show. But
yeah,
he's fantastic. He was in BSG, he was on Alias. Great,
yeah.
He's just great. Love Carl Lumbly. All right.
Yeah.
There's that. Now let's move on to the soundtrack grade. I give it an SABT for Cynthia and Barely There. Because it really struck me.
I kind of felt like the movie was daring me to laugh, you know, like, it was way ahead of its time, and it could have had a laugh track.
Yeah.
You know? Right. Like, but it needed music.
Hey, Brian Ibbett found the Hey Man Nice Jacket meme. There it is.
I did.
Yeah.
His name is Nice Jacket.
It's a
drunk guy.
This. Yeah.
Drunker.
I never knew that was a reference from this movie. I assume it is.
I don't know if it is, but it's.
Maybe.
It feels like it. Hey, man, nice jacket.
Pick you up after the game. All right. Moving on. We got alternate titles. Oh, no, we got Twitter posts. That's what we got to do. Twitter posts. You guys sum it up in 280 characters or less. Let's start with Randy.
Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai, a hot mess of people running around and getting thrown in jail and being sexy, kind of. And, okay, we're going to say kind of in air quotes. We're putting it's a tweet, so we have to put actual quotes. Kind of sexy-ish.
Yeah.
Pseudo-sexy men and women, just like a Saturday night.
You were throwing some really good flares there because I didn't see it coming that time. That was good.
Right.
All right. Yeah. Brian.
Just like Jeff Goldblum trying to avoid a dinosaur. Based on movement.
Yeah.
The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension, 1984. You have exceeded the character limit. Oh, the douche say.
That was my secondary. I'm glad you took it.
Yes.
Came really close. Finally, Brian Ibbett.
The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension. As frenetic and disjointed as a Brian Dunaway intro, but not nearly as clever.
Nice. Oh. Nice. Whoop. That's a nice compliment to you, Brian Dunaway. Yeah,
thank you.
Okay, well, this has to happen. This movie was almost called RoboCop and Kang versus Doc Brown and Nick Tortelli.
Yeah.
Yeah, with the Tortelli there at the end. Or sure. The Matrix Reloaded train guy versus Mike Ehrmantraut. Now, here's the problem.
The problem is
he's not a train guy.
The Matrix Reloaded.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Remembered it incorrectly.
Am I wrong, though? I have a scene in my head where Neo, it's in one of the sequels, Neo is at a train station and a guy's yelling at him. That's from Ghost.
That is like the Vincent Schiavelli yells at Patrick Swayze in Ghost.
I'm
just saying that I don't think so.
Why have I overlapped that? I don't know what I've done.
I need you guys to start calling the Swayze Clay movie by its proper name.
No, I think Swayze Clay movie is definitely what I'm going to call it from now on.
You know, because the one scene they make pottery.
What the bad thing is?
What?
I can't remember the song that was attached to the freaking pottery scene. And I mean, it's
the Righteous Brothers Unchained Melody.
Oh my God. Why can't I?
There
it is. Oh, yeah.
I was trying to place any Dirty Dancing song in there, and I was like, that's not right.
The time of my life.
The clay I've never of my made life.
Pottery like this. Right.
That pottery scene made every girl in America hot.
And I swear, if you put it in the oven for the right amount of time, it'll come
out. Have a nice vase for your flowers.
Imagine if Patrick Swayze sitting behind you, rubbing, holding your hands as it gently smushes pottery.
That's right. You know, he'd just been yelled at by this Schiavelli guy or whatever his name is.
Schiavelli. Might be Schiavelli. I don't know if it's Schiavelli or Schiavelli.
Schiavelli. He died at age 57 in Italy, where he was maybe not born, but he, you know, this is where he was.
A name like Schiavelli.
Yeah. You know it's good. Okay.
It's got to be good. Now that's Italian.
Hair just comes out like that, or you think he like made effort to make it, you know, like what, that?
I think that's all Vincent. That's his hair.
Oh yeah. I think that's him.
The only decision he made was to let it grow out. Is what you're saying?
So, right.
Yeah. When I see him, I immediately think of Stephen Wright. Is that weird?
Yeah, that's what I think too.
Very much Stephen Wright.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Expect him to go. I was driving on the airport runway. The lady poked me in the butt. I don't know. Whatever. I can't think of a good Steven. I can't think of a good joke.
I have a full scale map of the world. You're standing on it.
I went fishing with Salvador Dali. He was using a dotted line.
Wherever you go, there you are.
There you are, yeah. That's very good. All right, call emails. Back. Time for emails. This is from Jeff. He wrote in to filmsack@gmail.com. That's filmsack@gmail.com. You're all encouraged to do it. Thank you for all your emails. You guys are great, actually. We get great emails for Filmsack. Never any jerks. And this one says, greetings, fellow sackers. Two observations about the movie Soldier. Soldier. Number one, your discussion of the guns missed a major issue. Using combustion-style ammo in a non-oxygen environment. In the opening vignette, they show soldiers in spacesuits. I believe they were firing standard-appearing weapons. And if I remember my fire triangle correctly, you need fuel, ignition, and heat, and oxygen. If you need a spacesuit, that means there wasn't any oxygen or not enough. No O2, no bang. Number two.
Right. Hold on. I just want to summarize that part of the email as...
It's like a Saturday night at Ibbot's house.
Yeah. Hey, FilmSack. You didn't have enough problems with Soldier.
Yeah,
you needed to call out more problems with Soldier.
Yeah, more problems with Soldier, everybody. It's what we need. Number two, here's another one. Why is the trash planet filled with old aircraft parts and bodies? I checked the time frame of the movie, and it was supposed to be when it was set in 2036. So my belief that the future planes shouldn't look at all like later 20th century, early 21st century aircraft, and it's just not justified. Though you'd still have to wonder about the cost of shipping an uncrushed plane body to another planet to dump. That's essentially shipping that's essentially shipping empty air across the galaxy. Anyway, thanks for the entertainment. May your sack ever grow larger. That's your film sack, not your regular sack.
Oh, thank you.
No. Yeah. John Largeberry.
You need to have that checked out.
Gosh dang it, Dunaway, you said that the worst time. I'm choking here. John Largeberries. You bastard. All right. Well done. Filmsack@gmail.com. Thank you, Jeff. Anybody else out there want to say something, send those emails in. We'd love it. Our next film is Super Mario Brothers. Now, here's the thing.
Mario Brothers?
This is not streaming anywhere, but we have a listener who sent us a DVD a while back, and we now all have copies of it. We're going to do it from that because it just seems like it's never going to stream. Mm-hmm. And I want to thank, I got the name right here.
Nintendo has such a tight hold on that thing.
Right. They don't want anybody to see it. Worry about lost revenue. They're like, no.
Yep.
Right.
Jim Colbert, I assume it's Colbert, could be. It's usually Colbert, but that's only because I know Stephen Colbert. But anyway, James Colbert sent these in, all four copies. Huge thanks to him. He is also
thanks
our film
digging around
archivist.
That Walmart bargain bin. We appreciate you.
That's right. It may have been the only way. I mean, it just never shows up on streaming. So listeners, forgive us that there's not a way for you to do this in any legal way that we're aware of.
Well, I mean, sure. I mean, you could, stream. Yeah. I mean, but you can definitely order it like off Amazon. You can get the VHS version for $150.
Sure. Yeah. There's ways to get it. Getting DVDs is no problem and that sort of stuff. But I just wish it was streaming somewhere so that people could just easily find it, but it just needs to be done. So we're doing it. That's Super Mario Brothers, the Bob Hoskins, Leguizamo epic, John Leguizamo. That is not, there's no, Bob Hoskins has
done. Is there another more famous Leguizamo?
No, it made it sound like the first guy's name was Bob Hoskins Leguizamo, the way I said it. So
was John Leguizamo one of the aliens in Buckaroo Banzai?
No, he could have been.
Probably.
John Leguizamo.
Another John, yeah.
But then that's what I meant.
The who's bad guy in that? Oh,
Dennis Hopper.
Man. Right. Dennis Hopper. So not since Waterworld. Yep. Not since Waterworld have we had a good Hopper-esque role for film sack. Yeah, so
we get Lance Henriksen, we get Dan Castellaneta, we get Mojo Nixon, we get Fisher Stevens.
Wow. Fisher Stevens.
Loaded for Bear.
Wow.
Fisher Stevens. Third Rock from the Sun, Fisher Stevens?
No, that's... Fisher Stevens is Big Head Small Neck was involved with Michelle Pfeiffer for a long time. Fisher Stevens has a large head and a small neck.
Yeah, he's a light bulb. Just say it.
Oh, this guy.
Interesting.
Oh, that weird dude. He was with. I'm sorry. Did you say he was with? What's her name? No.
Yes, he was. He was with Michelle Pfeiffer for a while.
That's crazy. What was she doing? What was her deal? Something wrong there. Anyway. So yeah, he's a weird dude. He'll be on there and it'll be great. So Mario, Super Mario Brothers next week here on FilmSack. FilmSack.com is our website. You can always leave us the emails, FilmSack@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter @FilmSack and leave us reviews wherever you get your shows. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian and for Randy.
You are.
See you next time. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
Holy shit!
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.